from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 32 states allow the death penalty. With drug shortages and botched executions, states are being forced to take a closer look at how executions are carried out. Texas has only one dose of lethal injection left. Utah may opt for a firing squad if it runs out. Oklahoma is considering death by nitrogen gas asphyxiation. And then there's the question right now in the Boston Marathon bombing case and more of whether we should go to the death penalty at all. This hour on Point, firing squads, drug cocktails, and the death penalty. Jason Clark is spokesman for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. They have one lethal dose left. It was supposed to be used today. That's been put off. When that's gone, it's gone. He told NPR's Martin Kosty last week why Texas was looking for alternatives to lethal injection.
It's not an issue that's unique to Texas. Department of Corrections throughout the United States are facing similar issues. And it becomes an issue because drug companies placed restrictions, making it more difficult to purchase those type of drugs.
European companies don't even want to provide them to the United States. Most of them do not believe in the death penalty, don't have it, can't believe we still do. But we do in many states. Here's Utah State Representative Paul Ray. He co-sponsored legislation that passed in Utah, waiting for the governor's decision now, that would bring back firing squads if Utah could not obtain drugs for lethal injection.
In a firing squad, the individual dies anywhere from 3 to 5 seconds. It's a quick bleed out that happens.
I don't think it's a bleed out, but we'll look more closely at that as we go here. Joining me now from Washington is Jeff Guo, reporter for The Washington Post. He's been looking at the different options that states are considering as lethal injection doses dwindle. Jeff, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So just to make it perfectly clear, what exactly has brought the flow of chemicals for lethal injection to more or less a halt?
Well, it started a couple years ago when a lot of companies started realizing that the drugs they were making were actually being used to kill prisoners. And it's kind of funny that it took so long for companies to realize this, but the way that drugs are supplied, it's sometimes very circuitous. And so, but activists were starting to, you know, bring it to companies' attention. And then a couple years ago, the EU slapped an export ban on a lot of these kinds of drugs. And so now you have these departments of correction all around the country who are having trouble. They're running out of drugs and they can't find the drugs that they need to execute the prisoners sitting on death row.
The EU export ban because they do not approve of capital punishment.
Yes, they do not approve of it.
Even when the drugs have been available, they've been misused. In the last year, we've had some really botched, horrifically botched executions or attempts.
Yes, and that is because a lot of prison officials are trying, because they can't get the drugs that they have used in the past, they're trying new drugs or new combinations of drugs. And a lot of these are untested. And so that's leading to some problems. And that's sort of why the Supreme Court has decided to look into a particular combination of drugs in Oklahoma that some say is not a humane way to execute people.
We had this as the situation last year in Oklahoma. Clayton Lockett, 38 years old, 6:23 p.m. Officials began administering the first of three drugs. Declared him unconscious at 6:33, and then, boom, 3 minutes later, he's breathing again heavily. He's writhing on the gurney. He's straining to get off of it. Looks like he's trying to speak. His attorney said it was a horrible thing to witness. This was totally botched. They found a ruptured vein, on and on. When he finally died of a massive heart attack, sort of half an hour later.
Right, exactly. And so in that case, it's unclear whether it was the combination of drugs or if it was the process of inserting that IV into his vein that was botched, but that was horrific. But there have been other cases in which that same combination of drugs has been used, and it didn't seem to go very well. And the complaint seems to be that the anesthetic that they use to knock you out, this new anesthetic that they're trying out may not be effective enough, or they may not be using in the right doses. But the problem is you can't – it's not something that you can really – test on people, I guess, is kind of the problem. It's sort of unethical to, you know, experiment with ways of killing people.
Of course, there are many people who passionately wish we did not have the death penalty at all in this country, but many others, by the polls anyway, who do support it. If states are running out of these drugs, which they liked to see as a more humane way, but I'm not sure they really were, but if they're running out of those, what's the gamut of options that is being considered now? Firing squad has got the most attention, but it's not the only thing. Start with firing squad.
Sure. And so Utah outlawed death by firing squad in 2004. They thought that lethal injection was the more humane option, and so they wanted to make that the standard throughout the state. But now that those drugs are becoming harder and harder to come by, legislators wanted a backup option. Just in case they ran out of these drugs, what were they going to do? So they brought back the firing squad. And this is a bill that is sitting on the governor's desk right now, and he's supposed to sign it this week. It's unclear if he will. A lot of groups are urging him to veto it. Tennessee also last year, they installed the electric chair. They brought that back as a backup option. Mm-hmm. And so the way that this works is if they cannot find – they cannot get enough of the drugs that they need, or if lethal injection is ruled unconstitutional, then they will instead use the electric chair.
As you say, the Supreme Court looking at lethal injection, when is the court supposed to take that up?
Well, there's supposed to be a hearing in April, and they, you know, will issue the decision when they are ready to issue it sometime this summer, probably.
So Tennessee with a backup of an electric chair, and then we get into even more kind of exotic sounding things: nitrogen gas. Who's considering what there, and what's the effect that they would use for execution?
So this is kind of it's bizarre, but it sounds like something that might actually work. So legislators in Oklahoma are considering a bill right now. It's passed the House. It's in the Senate to use nitrogen asphyxiation as a backup way to kill people. And the way this works is the law itself doesn't specify how to carry out this execution, but generally you would put a bag over someone's head. You would fill that bag full of nitrogen, and they would breathe it in, and they would basically asphyxiate, and they would die. But this would be different from suffocation, because when you're suffocating, it's very unpleasant, and you are struggling to breathe, and it's awful. But what proponents of this method say is that it's actually quite painless, because you're breathing in – because you're still able to breathe. You're just not getting enough oxygen. And your body is actually not very good at detecting situations in which you're not getting enough oxygen. And so you will just get really dizzy. You will maybe get a little giddy, and then you will pass out and you'll die. And this is what they say will happen.
So there we've got a firing squad on the table, could be signed into law this week in Utah, already passed by the legislature there. Tennessee with its electric chair backup, Oklahoma looking at nitrogen gas. 32 states have the death penalty. What about the others that don't have options so far on the table but are, along with everybody else, looking at this dwindling supply of chemicals for lethal injection? Do they just stop execution? Do we get, in effect, an end to capital punishment just because the means go away?
So a lot of them already, they have laws in place. Oklahoma, for instance, has laws in place that specify backup options in case lethal injection is ruled unconstitutional. The law right now in Oklahoma is that if lethal injection is taken off the table, then they will use – I think it's the electric chair. And if not the electric chair, I think it is the firing squad. It might also – I think it's the firing squad. And so what a lot of states – but the problem – a lot of states have backup options in place in case lethal injection is ruled unconstitutional. But what they don't have right now, and what a lot of them are trying to pass laws on, is what do you do when you just can't find the right drugs? Because there are combinations. There is a combination of drugs that the Supreme Court has said, you know, this is constitutional. This is – you are allowed to kill people using this specific combination of drugs. But what do you do when you don't have any? And that's sort of what the Utah bill was trying to do. It was saying not only if it's ruled unconstitutional, but if we just can't find the right drugs, we need a backup option. And firing squads it is, I guess.
Capital punishment had something like 80% public support in polls back in the 80s, early 90s. Now it's down around 60%, low 60s% among the American public. Does the means of execution affect public support, Jeff? If we're using firing squads and nitrogen asphyxiation and electric chair, does public support go down?
I think that if you don't believe the state should be killing people, then the means of punishment, it's irrelevant, right? But
well,
I wonder though.
Many people had the impression that lethal injection was painless. It's just like, you know, you like pop in a few pills and off you go to sleep. And it turns out it's not that way. But that was the impression that may have kept support higher than it would be otherwise.
I think you're right on that. But I also think that if we rule out lethal injection, if we sort of discover that some of these methods are, incredibly painful and cruel and shouldn't be done, then I think that people who do support the death penalty might encourage lawmakers to look for other ways of killing people, as, you know, we're seeing in Oklahoma, where they are, you know, innovating in sort of this strange and, kind of perverse way, looking at ways of killing people by asphyxiating them.
Innovation takes on a whole new meaning right there. Jeff Guo with The Washington Post, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about firing squads, drug cocktails, and the death penalty. Supplies of the lethal injection drugs have dwindled. Texas has one left, and that is a state that is not shy about executing prisoners. The EU has put an export ban on this. They don't want to see capital punishment in their own country or in the United States, but it's there. American states looking for alternatives. Utah used firing squads until 2004. They're looking at bringing them back. Bruce Burns is a Republican in the Wyoming Senate next door. He's pushing to allow the use of firing squads in Wyoming. A couple of months ago, gave an interview with KCYW-TV explaining why.
I tried to put myself in the position of somebody being executed and what method would I prefer. And although none of them are particularly enjoyable, the firing squad to me seemed the most merciful.
We're back to that. Ronnie Lee Gardner was executed by firing squad in Utah in 2010. In an interview with the Associated Press on March 12th last week, his brother Randy said firing squads are an inhumane form of punishment.
It's cruel and unusual punishment. I don't believe in the death penalty, and the firing squad is very barbaric. You know, when you take somebody and you tie them to a chair, put a hood over their head, and you shoot them from 25 feet with four rifles pointed at their heart, that's pretty barbaric.
The brother of the last man executed by firing squad in Utah. Joining me now from New York is Deborah Denno, professor of law at Fordham University School of Law. She focuses on criminal law, criminal procedure, the death penalty. She's opposed to the death penalty. We'll hear from an advocate in a moment, Robert Blecker. But first, Deborah Denno, to you, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
If Utah brings it back, what do we know about how it was done there in the past? Is the description we just heard, four guns at 25 feet, accurate? I mean, I was reading a description of how it was done. I thought it was five, one of the men with blank rounds, so no one knows exactly who did and who didn't fire the deadly round. What, the executed to be strapped into a chair with a target placed over their heart? Is that how they did it?
Well, that's a general description. Of course, Utah has to provide the exact description on how it does it. But, usually it is 25 feet with four shooters and five individuals shooting and a target on the heart. I will say that the brother of anyone who's executed is going to be appalled by the method of execution, no matter what it is.
Here we are looking at these. Are we becoming less humane as we move away from chemicals? Or given how gruesome some of these chemical deaths have been, the lethal injections, is it all the same?
Lethal injection is a horrible way to die. I think we're just beginning to discover that, but I've been looking at execution methods for 25 years. I always thought at the very start, from the very first lethal injection execution in 1982, which was botched, by the way, to the very last one that we've had, that this is a very disturbing and inhumane way to die.
Is it somehow inevitably that way, or is it because I'm reading here that very often they don't have trained people administering the drugs?
Very often they don't have trained people. And in other words, I mean, as Jeff was describing with the April 29th execution of Clayton Lockett, we're just beginning to find, and these materials are coming out all the time now, especially yesterday, that even though there was a paramedic and a doctor in the room, that neither of them knew what they were doing. They didn't have the right equipment. It was acknowledged in testimony now that the wrong needles were available. The drugs were not labeled. They didn't know which drug was which. They had another execution coming in 2 hours, and they were very stressed by that. So it's not just the drugs. It's the paltry training of the executioners, in addition to a panic scenario that often creates chaos in the execution room.
We certainly saw a lot of dismay and more in Oklahoma last year, last April. Clayton Lockett, lethal injection execution went horribly wrong. He was convicted in 2000 of murder, rape, kidnapping. CBS covered the story last year.
Authorities say Lockett's vein failed. They believe he died of a heart attack 40 minutes after the procedure started. Governor Mary Fallon ordered a 14-day stay of execution for another inmate, also set to die last night.
Deborah Deno, I know that you're opposed to the whole business of capital punishment, and we'll look at why. But right now, states are looking to alternatives. As they do that, what do you think of those that are on the table? If humanity is even the right word, and opponents would say it's not, but a firing squad of nitrogen gas asphyxiation, electric chair, these are gruesome. We don't want to be ghoulish at the same time. These are moving toward actual use. How do you look at them?
Well, we've always used all the methods that you just mentioned. The nitrogen gas is just a variation on lethal gas, which was created in 1921 in Nevada in this country. So there are variations on the theme. But of the five methods that we currently have in this country, I agree with the politicians that firing squad is the most humane. Death takes place within a minute, if not less. It's the only method of execution for which we actually have trained people. We certainly never have had trained people for lethal injection.
What do you mean trained people?
Gas,
just people who know how to shoot
or electrocution or hanging.
What do you mean by trained? Just that they know
trained,
how to shoot?
In other words, we have experts throughout the country, prison personnel, police officers, individuals who are trained marks people to shoot and kill either large animals or individuals.
So
we don't have that for any other method of execution.
We heard a politician who's pushed this in Utah say that the bleed out is quick, but it's not really bleed out, is it? That kills with a firing squad aimed at the heart. It must be. Is it shock? What is it exactly?
It's instantaneous heart death. Or there was an experiment in 1938 of all things in Utah where the state officials strapped up an inmate in that state and administered an echocardiogram, and measured that inmate had heart death within 1 minute.
I mean, of course, there is a bleed out. Historically, they stacked sandbags around the executed here to contain the blood when it came. And that's only one way. Now, back on the table in this country, Jack in Batavia, New York, you're on. Thanks for calling, Jack.
Thanks, Tom. I am against the death penalty. I think it's cruel and unusual in itself. And I also believe that it's unevenly applied. And you have to be absolutely sure you have a guilty person, and we haven't always followed that.
All true.
But I used to work for a veterinarian, and veterinarians have been humanely putting animals to sleep, euthanizing them, executing them, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. for a long, long time. And they do it very simply, usually with an intravenous injection of something like a triple-strength barbiturate, like phenobarbital or pentobarbital. These are old anti-epileptic and anesthetic agents. Mm-hmm. And it is smooth, quick, irreversible. I've never seen an animal in pain. They just close their eyes, and they're usually gone before they hit the table.
Jack, stick with us. Deborah, what do you say to that? Jack wonders if vets can do it. Why? And, again, it's gruesome, but Why can't executioners in this country?
Well, first of all, veterinarians are trained to do this. They're educated. We don't have educated executioners in this country. We have whoever we can get a hold of in the Department of Correction. That's number one. But number two,
let's just pause right there.
It's worth emphasizing that we were using drugs in lethal injection executions. The pancremonium, there's a paralytic and a potassium chloride, and we're still using those. We're using those in Oklahoma still. You cannot use those drugs on an animal. It's against veterinarian policy throughout the country. So we have long used drugs on human beings in the execution methods context that we could never use on an animal for purposes of putting that animal to sleep.
Why would vets be denied what we're using on humans? You mean it's not good?
It's the other way. It's humans are denied what we're using on animals.
Why?
The procedure. Because there's just so much more scrutiny. We care more and have much more scrutiny and regulation of how we put to sleep animals than we have ever had on how we deal with human beings.
It seems that if you're going to take on the moral burden of capital punishment, that at a minimum you ought to have a moral obligation to have trained people so that it's not botched.
Well, that's right, a moral and of course, legal obligation, because we're talking about the Eighth Amendment Cruel and Unusual Punishment Clause. But that's not how Department of Corrections operate, nor has it ever been how they've operating. And we could see that with the Clayton Lockett execution. We had incompetent executioners, unmarked, unlabeled drugs. You wouldn't have that in a veterinarian hospital. The wrong needles, the wrong equipment, and knowing that you had to execute another person coming within 2 hours. If you read about that, there's complete mayhem in that execution room.
What about nitrogen gas? Oklahoma's looking at that now. Nitrogen asphyxiation.
Well, I have to disagree on Jeff on his optimism on how that's going to take out. Everything I've read about how Oklahoma's going about using or applying nitrogen gas eerily reminds me of all the news articles, and I've read many of them, detailing on how we were going to conduct lethal injection executions in this country in 1977. Time after time, there were quotes saying, this is going to put individuals to sleep, it's going to be humane, it's going to be perfect. Those quotes are almost mirrored in what I'm reading about Oklahoma now with nitrogen gas. It all depends, let me emphasize, on who's doing it and how it's being done and where it's being done. I am not optimistic.
Irene in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Irene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm wondering if the point of all these grisly schemes is that to make it a spectacle. Because as I understand it, the injection of air into a vein will kill someone quickly and humanely, or a bolus of insulin. I mean, Klaus von Bülow did it. I'm not sure why executioners can't use something, but is it too simple? And consequently, it doesn't give people enough of a sense of vengeance.
Irene, let us pick it up. Deborah, we'll hear from Robert Blecker in just a second. But what about this? Are there like sort of miraculously smooth ways that could be used? And we're not doing it because we want that spectacle, that vengeance spectacle.
If you have incompetent executioners administering this procedure oftentimes to inmates who have compromised veins, or in a prison setting with stress, unlabeled drugs, the wrong needles, and people who don't know what they're doing. With the Clayton Lockett execution, there's testimony that the doctor could not tell the difference between a vein and an artery. So if you have those kinds of challenges, you're going to have the kind of botch. It's not a simple procedure for incompetent, inexperienced executioners.
Where's the moral gravity here? So you come down, Deborah, against capital punishment itself. Tell us exactly why. Is it a principled moral objection? Is it about equity and fairness? Is it that we just don't do it well?
I'm against capital punishment because we don't do it well and because we're not fair and equitable. In principle, as a moral issue, I'm not against it. I'd have no problem executing certain individuals who really defy our moral norms. But I have found through study over decades that that's simply impossible.
Deborah, stand by, please, in New York. Also with us from New York right now is Robert Blecker. He is professor of law at New York Law School, an advocate for the death penalty. He spent 3 decades inside maximum security prisons and on death rows in 7 states, interviewing convicted and condemned killers and those who guard them. He's author of The Death of Punishment, Searching for Justice Among the Worst of the Worst. Robert Blecker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom, to lend some balance to this discussion.
Why do you think we're in this situation where we don't have the drugs, we don't administer them correctly? Let alone before we even get to the question of whether we should have capital punishment at all, why is it in such a shambles?
Well, it's partly in such a shambles because the abolitionists, those who oppose the death penalty, have successfully pressured the suppliers in Europe with the threat of boycott from supplying those drugs. But it doesn't bother me that lethal injection is under attack. I think it's a terrible method of execution, but not because it might cause pain, but because it certainly causes confusion.
What would be a better way then, in your view, and why?
Well, can I first express what it tells us about ourselves? I mean, you asked at the beginning of the show, you posed that question, does the way we execute affect our thinking about the death penalty? And I would say that the answer is yes, and that our thinking about punishment affects the way we execute. So if you don't mind, if I could just say a word about lethal injection and what it tells us about ourselves, in my view. It tells us at the deepest level that we're ashamed to punish. That is, what we've effectively done with lethal injection is that we've medicalized it. I witnessed an execution. By the way, Randy Gardner did not witness the execution of his brother. When he talks about it being cruel and unusual, he talks about the bullet holes that he saw afterwards in his brother's body, but he didn't witness the execution itself. I witnessed an execution. It was a lethal injection. And I was also at the bedside of my father-in-law, who was suffering from an incurable cancer and was in a hospice where they were administering a lethal dose of painkiller to him, which was necessary to end his pain. And what struck me as absolutely bizarre was that I couldn't tell the difference between the two situations. In both situations, the person who was dying was wrapped in white sheets, lying on a gurney with an IV coming from his arm, surrounded by medical technicians and loved ones. And I shuddered when I witnessed the execution. And the two were so bizarrely similar. How we execute those whom we rightfully detest should in no way resemble how we put to death when we need to in order to end the pain and suffering and misery of those that we love.
Well, why not? I mean, the Constitution says no cruel and unusual punishment, no cruel. What do you want, some barbaric display?
No, by no means. Actually, Deborah and I have common ground, and we've long had common ground for decades on the firing squad as the most appropriate method of execution, because we acknowledge what we're doing. We acknowledge it to be punishment. But there's an overstatement about the botched execution. Notice what hasn't been – the two things haven't really been stated about Clayton Lockett's execution. He's become now the contemporary poster child for the botched execution. One is that many anesthesiologists believe that he, in fact, experienced absolutely no pain, that the snorting, the shivering, the moaning, the groaning is perfectly consistent with being under anesthesia. When we go under anesthesia and they break our bones and remove our organs, we often snort, shiver, and moan for an extended period of time, even though we are completely unconscious. So it's very possible that Clayton Lockett experienced absolutely no pain, and that what we're responding to is our sense of repulsion over the appearance of pain. And that's, of course, what the paralytic agent was meant to do. And there's no greater expert than Deborah Denno on the history and the problems and the methods of execution. But if you look back to it, and she'll confirm, it was a very slipshod, haphazard way that Oklahoma introduced it. But the theory behind it was that the paralytic agent was supposed to make the execution appear peaceful, even if it, in fact, was painful. We're much more about appearances, to directly answer your initial question, than we are about the actual reality of the punishment. But let's not forget what Lockett himself did. He shot one victim, he raped another, and then the victim that he shot, he brought while she was bleeding and made her stand there and witness as they dug her grave, and then he buried her alive in it.
Robert Blecker, hold the thought. We're up against a break right here. Robert Blecker at New York Law School, Deborah Denno in New York. We're talking about firing squads, drug cocktails, capital punishment. This is On Point. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. We're talking this hour about firing squads, drug cocktails, and the death penalty. The country struggling again, state by state, with how this gets done and whether it should be done at all. States are running out of drugs as suppliers refuse to supply them. Oklahoma looking at nitrogen asphyxiation. Now, here's Oklahoma State Representative Mike Christian. He's asked his state to reconsider this, to look at doing it. He spoke here to KFOR News Channel 4 in September.
If you deplete oxygen, it's within 8 to 14 seconds, up to no more than 20 seconds, that they pass out, and then within a few minutes, up to 8 minutes, probably less, that they would be pronounced dead.
Anything can be described as simple and painless, but is it really? In July last summer, a judge in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Alex Kaczynski, who believes the death penalty is appropriate in some cases, talked with ABC News about using firing squads for executions.
Trying to make it look like it's a gentle, kind process is misguided, because it's not.
Here's the president last May responding to that botched execution of Clayton Lockett in Oklahoma, President Obama.
In the application of the death penalty in this country, we have seen significant problems. I think we do have to, as a society, ask ourselves some difficult and profound questions.
Let's go to a couple listeners right here. Miriam in Apalachin, New York. Miriam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm addressing the question of death penalty or not. And I feel that it is inappropriate for the state to take vengeance. It should only be, you know, be able to do what is to the social benefit. The only reason for the IC to the death penalty is to either take emotional or religious vengeance, because those are the only things that I see make any sense of that argument. I really feel that the only social benefit that you might get from the death penalty is to actually donate that person's organs. They would be put under, like you said, and not feel anything. And that would be the only way that you would get any kind of social benefit from that death. I feel that you really shouldn't have any death penalty because we cannot, as said before, determine whether somebody is absolutely innocent in all cases.
Miriam, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more, if I may, and I'll bring it to our guest, Scott, in Miami. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I agree with Mary. So I'm against the death penalty for a number of reasons that have already been mentioned, with the danger of it going wrong. There's the danger that, God forbid, a wrongfully convicted person will be put to death. It's been shown that it's not a very good deterrent, and it's even more expensive than a life term. But I agree with Mary about the motivations for the death penalty. I can recall a presidential debate in which I think it was Dukakis who was asked by the moderator, would you drop your opposition to the death penalty if it was your own wife who had been murdered? And I think that's the personal vendetta is the worst possible reason that you could have this pass down that judgment from the state. Even your guest used the words, I think he said, rightfully detest. That's such a horrible reason. It's not practical. The only reason, like Mary said, is for vengeance or to get back at
someone. Scott, I appreciate your call from Miami. We'll look more at means. Robert Blecker here. Sophia writes online, says, Scandinavian countries stopped death penalty for over 100 years. That's really something we should think about, even here in the United States. I mean, Wisconsin dropped it in 1853. Michigan abolished 1846. Maine, 1887. Why even still do it with the cost, the moral quandaries around it, the sense that it's just vengeance, Robert?
First of all, there's a difference between vengeance and retribution. Retribution is limited, proportional, and appropriately directed. Vengeance need have no limits. It need not be proportional and need not be appropriately directed. But retribution does form the heart of it. You ask about Scandinavia and following Europe's lead, especially mm-hmm. Scandinavia's lead. But we forget what's happened in Europe. Europe has abolished life without parole as well as the death penalty, A. And B, talking about Scandinavia, I'm sure we all remember Anders Breivik. In 2011, first he set off a bomb in front of the parliament building
Norway.
In Oslo,
mm-hmm.
killing 8, right? Then he went to the island, if you remember, and murdered another 69 people. Do you know what he's gotten in the punishment he receives in Norway for the premeditated murder of 77 people, most of whom were young? He's gotten the maximum sentence that Norway gives out, 21 years in prison, which is what he's serving now. But Norway is being very cruel to him at the moment. He's on a hunger strike. And he's on a hunger strike because they're not allowing him to have PlayStation 3. They are only giving him PlayStation 2. So when we fastly talk about following Europe's lead and about the enlightened views of Scandinavia, let's remember exactly whose views we're looking at.
Robert, what's the murder rate in Norway compared to the United States?
Much, much lower.
Yeah, so isn't that the goal? I mean, no. What are we getting for all of our bloodletting here, all of our execution?
Good, and that's what your listeners asked in the call-in. Why not donate his organs and harvest his organs? That's what the Chinese are doing. This is all, what good will
it do?
That
wasn't her first point, though. I think, isn't the point ultimately to get to the least amount of suffering and crime? Norway has much less murder than we do, and they have much less capital punishment.
Tom, but you miss a crucial word. If you look at the preamble of the United States Constitution, it's not only forming a more perfect union and common defense and general welfare, but there's one other word that you leave out and your callers leave out, justice. Justice. Limited proportional punishment as deserved. Let the punishment fit the crime. And so our real question about the death penalty is not only is it right in and of itself, but is it better than its alternative? And if you examine the quality of life day to day for those who are serving life without parole, and I've spent thousands of hours inside maximum security prisons interviewing the killers themselves and the people who guard them, you will discover that it is nobody's job to punish inside the prison. There is no mission statement of any Department of Corrections that lists punishment or its synonym as any part of its mission. The officers tell you with almost a single voice, it's none of my business what a guy did out there. My only job is to make sure he behaves well once he's inside. So we articulate, we mouth the premise as the essence of justice to have the punishment fit the crime, and then we actually administer our prison system to completely turn it on its head. That's why the death penalty is ultimately correct, because it is the only just alternative.
Well, of course, we get to decide as a society what constitutes justice here. Let me go to Noni in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Noni, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see, Noni?
I see that we are not giving much respect to the people that we are trying to execute have murdered, raped, tortured. We're not showing their families much respect in the fact that no one thinks these people should be put to death. Sometimes I wonder why we worry about how humanely we put them to death. They didn't worry about what they did to their victims.
But you're in Oklahoma. You must have seen all the uproar around Clayton Lockett last year. I mean, that didn't look too good, did it, Noni?
It didn't bother me at all. My thinking was he did something that got him in the situation that he was in. And, if we can't do it by means of lethal injection, then we should all have some way of putting these people to death. I think just sitting in jail for years and years and years isn't the answer. It's something that's costly to the state. I just don't see it as anything that's productive at all to have these people rotting away in prison somewhere.
Of course, the way it's turning out, execution after a long time in prison and all the appeals, I guess, can be pretty expensive too. Noni, thank you for your call. Let me hold that and get one more right here. Franklin, Tennessee. Becky, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So in general, I'm against the death penalty because it's not always just in every situation. To learn that the executioners, administering the lethal injections, that they're not regulated, I don't know if that's true, but to me that's horrific and that's incredibly inhumane. Firing squad, the woman earlier did say that is actually so much more humane because those people are trained marksmen. So I feel that, the vet calling earlier, I still am confused. Why is this even an issue? I mean, if a vet every day can put an animal to sleep quietly and peacefully, and I've been there and seen it in person, where's the question? That's so much more humane. And I want to also lobby and write letters about this issue. Who is it, the Department of Corrections that allows these executioners to, if that is true, I'm not sure. I would love to know where I can send my letter to voice my opinion about, the potentially looking at firing squad as being more.
I mean, it's state by state, Becky, and I think ultimately this is a political question in every state. Maybe your legislators are the right place to go. Deborah Deno, we come back to the wish for the that it would, if it's going to happen, that it would happen as professionally and apparently painlessly for humans, at least as it does for animals. Go back to Becky's confusion on that. We had that call earlier in the hour. If vets can do it, what is the problem for giving at least equal respect to humans?
Well, it is a good point to raise, but of course veterinarians go to veterinarian school and part of their training is how to put an animal to sleep. We don't have those comparable kinds of requirements for executioners. Many times these states have such strict secrecy laws, we don't even know who is in the execution room. The only reason we knew who was in the execution room of Clayton Lockett was because there was a disaster that unfolded, and now we're getting testimony from the people in the room. But here on the outside, you had a doctor and a paramedic, two people that you would think just by their their surface qualifications would be able to do this, and they were not able to do it because people who are engaging in an execution process are not selected people. I'm not being elitist when I say that, but they're not. And second, I just wanted to point out, in contrast to what Robert was saying, Clayton Lockett was conscious and aware during much of that execution process. It took over 2 hours, and it was 40 minutes later that he died. He was conscious when he died. So this is not someone who's sleeping, or so-called, really, they're not sleeping anyway. They're paralyzed, and who knows whether they're conscious or not. But this is all to say, again, that a veterinarian, that skill level is not present in our execution rooms.
We're talking about the death penalty and means of execution in this country. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Deborah, maybe Robert Blecker, I mean, he says we're too conflicted about it to do it right. He says we shouldn't be conflicted about it. This is justice, appropriate justice. And maybe the problem is that we're half in. We say yes, the death penalty, but no to training people up to do it right because we don't want to make the investment or feel ambivalent about the whole project.
Well, Robert and I do agree that there's a lot of ambivalence here, and that ambivalence is dangerous. There's a hypocrisy here. We developed electrocution and lethal gas and lethal injection, all in efforts to make these executions look very humane. But these have been the three most disastrous forms of execution, whereas ironically, the one method that looks most like a punishment, and Robert and I agree on this, that is the most honest form of execution, that being the firing squad. At least of the ones that we have on the books, that's the most humane. Now, Robert and I probably do have some differences on how we would define what we consider to be justice. I really stick very closely to the Eighth Amendment Cruel and Unusual Punishments Clause, and that does not define retribution as something that's going to be involving pain, nor does it define any type of explicit suffering in prisons. God forbid that we have prison guards being able to inflict punishments. They do so already. We already have statistics on that. Half of all sexual assaults in prisons, unconsensual sexual assaults, are inflicted by prison guards.
Robert, are you for firing squad in the end? And if you are because you support capital punishment, do you have some concern from your perspective that the public might turn against the whole project if we start seeing these kind of Guernica images of, rifles and bullets flying, and it's just too much for the American public? They don't want it.
Yes, it's a very good question, Tom. In fact, the great transformation in punishment took place in two dimensions. One is that it moved away from the body, and it was replaced by a deprivation of liberty measured in units of time, and that's what we call prison. And the other is that it moved from the public sphere largely to the private sphere. If we return to the firing squad, we are both returning to a tangible effect on the body. Lethal injection has no discernible effect. I mean, it kills, but the body looks the same way after as it did before, whereas the firing squad, it does not. There's bleeding out, so that we are more honestly and forthrightly acknowledging it, and to the degree that we become more aware of it and that we even make it public, then you're right. We raise the possible risk that the public, who's in whose name this is being done, understanding it more fully and seeing it more honestly might, in fact, rebel against it.
I mean, risk or opportunity. Many would like to see it go away, on the other hand.
Yes. And if they do, and we abolish it as a result, well, at least we're doing it honestly. We should acknowledge what we're doing. This is punishment. I mean, if you, by the way, what Deborah suggested, well, she didn't suggest, but one might think that I'm advocating torture as the appropriate means for those who themselves, like Clayton Lockett, tortured his victim and buried her alive. I'm not advocating torture. But let's imagine that Clayton Lockett did suffer for 30 minutes. It cannot be public policy to have him suffer for 30 minutes. It would violate the Eighth Amendment. It would be cruel and unusual punishment, and it would be inhumane. But if, in fact, he did that, if, for example, he were walking down the street and suddenly got buried himself alive and suffered for 30 minutes, would I mind? No. It would be poetically just. It cannot be public policy. It cannot be the punishment as designed to be torture. But it would still be poetically just if he were to suffer before he died. He deserved it.
Many Americans feel just the other way, that there should be no capital punishment. Many states do not, but the majority still do. And while that goes on, the means, a big issue right now, maybe pulling together a lot of angles about how we do or do not deal with the full reality of what is state policy in 32 states, capital punishment. It's there in the Boston Marathon bombing trial and more right now. Robert Blecker, Deborah Denno, thank you very much for helping us look at it today. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.